in some ways, I'm still a little bit baffled by the fact that the Chiefs started off 1-0, lost 5 straight, and then won 10 consecutive games to march all the way back to where their season began. In Week 1, the Kansas City Chiefs started off with a game in Houston against the Houston Texans. The Chiefs and the Texans, though, looked very different at those points. Then both teams slid, and then both teams zoomed back up. The Texans to the top of the division, the Chiefs to the top of the AFC wildcard spots, and now Houston is hosting a playoff game, and Justin Houston should be returning for the Kansas City Chiefs. I cannot be more excited. Welcome to Roughing the Kicker. I'm your host, Joshua Briscoe. We're on Arrowhead Addict. You can subscribe to this show on iTunes. In this show, we're going to touch on what the Chiefs did against the Oakland Raiders last week, because a few things are important, but mostly, this is a playoff show. Playoffs! The Chiefs are going to have a chance to either cap an incredible turnaround or end yet another season in devastating, heartbreaking fashion. I want to start off this show with the one takeaway from the Chiefs-Raiders game that I think is most important. The Chiefs won 23-17. It was not a beautiful game in a lot of places. It ended up being a meaningless game because the Chargers couldn't do anything against the Denver Broncos, even though they forced an incredible amount of turnovers. The offense did nothing, and Peyton Manning returned for the Broncos, which I'm sure you already knew. But one of the things I talked about a lot last week is how I've seen Alex Smith not just become a top-tier game manager, because we've always known that he could do that. That's always been a part of what Alex Smith is capable of doing. It's what he did in San Francisco. In San Francisco, Alex Smith had a peak of top-tier game manager. I mean, you could probably have said the same thing about Ryan Fitzpatrick in a lot of ways until last week, where the Jets just barfed all over their own shoes, cost himself a playoff berth. But Alex Smith, over these last couple of weeks, has become a playmaker. And one of the criticisms that Smith had, even during one of his most impressive statistics, where he had, I think, the second longest streak in NFL history for number of passes without an interception, is that he was still being a little trigger shy on a couple of throws. And I'm never rooting for Alex Smith to become a gunslinger. That's not what his game is. That's not his best asset. And what I'm about to reference, even from the Raiders game, isn't necessarily the good kind of risks. There was a pass a couple of games ago where it was a deep shot down the sidelines and the ball was picked off at the 1 or 2 yard line. Those are the kind of risks that I'm thrilled to see. Last week, there was a deep shot to Chris Conley that never showed up in the stat sheets because it was a pass interference was called. Those are huge chunks of yardage that you don't see when you look back on the stat sheet at the end of the game or at the end of the year. But Alex Smith, After starting the game with two really just borderline flawless drives by the Chiefs, one that ended in a Jeremy Maclin 25-yard touchdown pass from Alex Smith, the other one ended with a Spencer Ware 3-yard touchdown run, so the Chiefs got off to a 14-0 start. Really flawless drives. A 4-minute drive and a 6-minute drive, 8 plays 80 yards, 12 plays 87 yards. Those are basic stats, but those are important. Picking up in chunks in that first drive, and then grinding down the Raiders in the next, and both of those drives ending in touchdowns. Great drives. But in the third quarter, actually in the second quarter, Alex Smith had back-to-back interceptions. He threw one pick, and then the next pass out of Alex Smith's hand was a pick six. After his first pick, I think a lot of people were wondering, well, how is Alex Smith going to bounce back from this? Well, he bounced back by throwing it straight to David Amerson for the pick six. And the first pass was bad. They were both bad. I wrote after the first pass, it was the first bad pass that I've seen from Alex Smith in a very, very long time. He had time in the pocket. The offensive line was not falling apart. The offensive line has given Smith reason to trust them for several weeks now, and he has. And Smith has gone through his reads better than I've ever seen him do as a Chief over these last several weeks. Smith had time, but he threw it in the double coverage. It got picked off, and that gave the Raiders fantastic field position. So then the Raiders drove, car scrambled, and Ron Parker got the interception to give the Chiefs the ball right back. So just like that, Alex Smith had an out. This didn't have to look bad. His mistake cost 0 points. Chiefs got the ball right back. But not to be, because the next pass, as I said, ended up being a pick six. Another bad throw, another bad decision, returned for a touchdown. And for me, the most important thing at that point, again, was seeing what happens next. And the Chiefs didn't have a chance to do anything else in the first half, but in the third quarter, Smith bounced back in a very important way in my mind. The half ended after some more stuff that's not important because we're not breaking down the whole game. But the Chiefs then ended up getting a safety on a block punt by DJ Alexander, the special teams player of the week in the AFC. And then the next drive after that safety only took four plays to go 53 yards, and it ended with an unbelievable pass from Smith to Demetrius Harris when it really, I guess, is an unbelievable reception. The ball was put where only Demetrius Harris could get it, and frankly, where Demetrius Harris probably wasn't going to get it. But he did. He went up and had the catch of his career, I think the first touchdown catch of his career, but the most acrobatic. He gets talked about being an ex-basketball player all the time. He showed it there. It was a fantastic catch from Harris. And then the Chiefs' offense ended up only ending with those 23 points, and it got a little scary towards the end when the Raiders scored against the Chiefs' prevent defense. The game ends up ending there. But to see the confidence in that pass, and then maybe even more so in the pass that came before it, on 3rd and 4, Smith threw it to Jeremy Maclin and got lit up by Khalil Mack, who ended up getting a roughing the passer penalty, which I rolled my eyes at. But got lit up by Khalil Mack, connected to Maclin, ended up going for 17 yards. Smith took a hit there. And then on that next play, fired a touchdown to Demetrius Harris on a point where only Harris could get the ball. Smith made two mistakes on back-to-back passes, and back in that third quarter, made back-to-back passes that showed us how high his ceiling has been this season. I think those are the most important things to take away from this game, because the Chiefs could not have moved in the standings. The Jets lost, so that locked them in to the 5 seed or jumping all the way up to the 3 seed. The Broncos won, though, so none of it mattered. There are other things in the game that were of interest during the game, but right now we get to shift our focus to a playoff game, so I'm going to take a little bit of creative liberty here and say let's do that now. Let's start by looking at the Houston Texans. I assume if you're listening to this show, you have a pretty good working knowledge of the Chiefs, and we'll certainly talk about the Chiefs quite a bit here coming up. But let's start with a few things about the Houston Texans. I think a good jumping off point is from KansasCity.com. The Kansas City Star has an article, 9 things you need to know about the Houston Texans. I'm going to focus just on 3 of them, but 3 of them I think are really relevant into bigger points. Maybe as many as 5. We'll see how this goes. First of all, let's start with the thing that everyone knows about the Houston Texans. If you asked the most well-known analyst to the most casual fan, what do you know about the Houston Texans? Tell me something about the Houston Texans. They're going to go, well, J.J. Watt. J.J. Watt. I don't know why I turned into John Gruden there for a second. J.J. Watt is amazing. And J.J. Watt is fantastic. He's probably going to be Defensive Player of the Year once again, and I can't really argue it. Last year, I could have argued for Justin Houston. Not this year. J.J. Watt broke his left hand in a December game against the Patriots, says this article, and played with a cast for 3 games. However, Watt played Sunday without the cast and had 3 sacks, giving him 17.5 for the season, end quote. Seeing what J.J. Watt can do with one hand is scary. Seeing what he can do with 2 hands is terrifying. And the Chiefs' offensive line has done some amazing things this year, but this is going to be an incredible test. Back in week 1, we found out that Donald Stevenson was going to start at left tackle, Eric Fisher was going to be at right, but then his injury happened. And then all of a sudden, we were talking about Ja Reed, a Baltimore Ravens castoff, who now the Chiefs have given an extension to, and will probably be the 3rd tackle at worst for the next couple of years in Kansas City. That was a look like it was going to be a disaster. The Chiefs obviously ended up winning that game. Brian Hoyer has improved since then, but so has Alex Smith. What the Chiefs have done with the offense, though, or the offensive line, especially the coaching from Andy Heck, is one of the offensive line coaches. It's incredible, and I wanted Heck and everyone who had anything to do with the offensive line to be canned after week 6. I really did, legitimately. If I was in charge after watching just what I had seen, without knowing, you know, the inner workings of the Chiefs system and everything, I would have fired most people having to do with the offensive line, because the start was so horrendous. It was such an inexcusable looking start to begin the season 1-5 when you had such hope, such expectations. And the offensive line was part of the problem. It wasn't the only problem by any means, but it was a huge part of the problem. What the Chiefs have done since then has been unbelievable. Eric Fisher could not get out of the doghouse last year. This year, he was going to start at right tackle. Then his injury stuff happened. He was getting some shade thrown at him from Dorsey and Andy Reid a little bit. You know, talking about his injury and not going up against J.J. Watt and the turf. And really strange, after having a nice preseason, really strange start to Eric Fisher's season. Last year was a struggle. The year before was a struggle. Eric Fisher has struggled. This year, he's been at left tackle for these last several weeks and has been improving constantly. Eric Fisher is having a very, very nice season. That's left tackle. Move over to left guard. Jeff Allen didn't play most of last year. He was hurt. He is currently being the firecracker of this offensive line. Not only is he making, and this is since Ben Grubbs, by the way, got injured. Ben Grubbs was supposed to be the left guard. He got injured. He's been on IR for a long time. Jeff Allen, since he stepped in, has made Eric Fisher better. He's made the offensive line better. He stood up for Alex Smith in instances where I'm not sure the rest of the offensive linemen were comfortable doing it. Jeff Allen has provided a spark to this offensive line in a big way. And he's a guy who is a real question mark as to where he fit coming into this season. Center, Mitch Morse, is a rookie. A rookie who's been playing very well, but a rookie. And playing center as a rookie in the NFL is very difficult. Morse missed a game. Zach Fulton got the start and played very well. Zach Fulton might end up getting the start coming up against the Texans on Saturday. I'm not scared of that. Zach Fulton's been very good. Move over to right guard. Laurent Duvernay-Tardif, in my opinion, the weakest link of this offensive line. A very raw product. A French-Canadian med student, which is really selling him short, but it's a funny descriptor. He has taken some steps. Again, I would call him the weakest point of this offensive line, but he's not a total liability. And then to his right, Ja Reed was a Ravens cast-off. He couldn't get a spot on the Ravens, and now he's starting at right tackle and playing pretty well. Now, whenever they have to deal with J.J. Watt on the right side of this offensive line on Saturday, should Ja Reed have a tight end helping him, I don't know, darn near every play? Yeah, he should. No one should have to deal with J.J. Watt by themselves, and that's going to open it up for another guy that I'll talk about later when we're previewing the game, more nuts and bolts. But Ja Reed has held his own against some awfully good pass rushers, and Alex Smith has shown it. It's hard to judge an offensive line, at least for me. I feel like I can watch an offensive line and go, okay, it feels like the quarterback's getting more time here. It feels like they're not letting guys through. It feels like the running game is improving. But the ways you can tell it, I think, by kind of zooming out, is looking behind it. Look behind the offensive line, or in some cases, in front of it. The running game has only improved in these as the offensive line has improved. Makes a lot of sense. But the most important thing goes back to Alex Smith. It's not that I think Alex Smith is the only important player on this Chiefs team, but he's the quarterback. If your quarterback is bad in the NFL, you're not going to be good. If your quarterback is great in the NFL, you're going to be fine. If it's somewhere in the middle, the rest of your team plays huge importance. That's where the Chiefs are. But to judge the importance of the offensive line and what they've done over these last few weeks and how this relates to this game, J.J. Watt, you have to look at what the quarterback does. And Alex Smith has taken his time going through his reads in a way that, again, I've never seen him do in Kansas City before in these last, I don't know, 6 to 8 weeks or so. You can sit at home and watch on TV, watch Alex Smith move his head through his different receivers on most plays. There were times for the last year and a half, you know, last season and then half of this season, when Smith would drop back, look to one guy, and then go, "Dear God, I'm gonna die," tuck it and run. This year, Alex Smith has been running the ball in more designed plays and more later in a play, or whenever he can look at a defense and go, okay, pause for a tenth of a second, comprehend what's going on, the defense looks this way, I'm going to run it and pick up more safely than I could taking a shot, you know, 12 yards down the field that's probably not going to end very well. Smith has been more patient, he's been playing smarter football, and he's been better in many ways because of the offensive line. Is it going to hold up as well against J.J. Watt? No, it's going to be a challenge. I mean, that's going to be one of the most important things for this offense, I think, is if the offensive line can hold up against the Texans' defensive line. If it can, the Chiefs are going to win this game, and they're probably going to win it by double digits, in my mind. We'll come back to that in a second. Number six on this list, quote, Houston held opponents to 17 or fewer points 8 times. The Texans were third in total defense entering Sunday's game, 316.5 yards per game, and third in pass defense, 212.2 yards per game. Texans defense coordinator Romeo Crennel, who's the Chiefs head coach before Andy Reid, in case you forgot that, I add parenthetically. However, Houston also gave up 44 points to the Dolphins and 48 to the Falcons. Those big games to bad teams are the outlier here. And I think the important part is what the Texans do against the pass. Third and pass defense is going to give the Chiefs some trouble. In a lot of cases, it's because of the pass rush. I'm not terrified of the Texans secondary. In fact, there are some familiar names that I'll touch on in a little while. But the Texans pass rush is what you fear. We just cover that in a big way, so I'll move on to the next thing. Number 7, looking for good wins, the Texans beat the Jets 1 week after handing the Bengals their first loss of the season. I only bring this one up because the Chiefs don't have this kind of banner victory. They crushed the Broncos in Denver, which you could fairly, I think, chalk up in a lot of ways to how bad Peyton Manning was and partially that being injured. Beating the Steelers, a playoff team, really doesn't count in my mind because it was against Landry Jones, who is not starting now because Ben Roethlisberger is back. The playoff team the Chiefs beat was the Texans back in week one. Both of these teams look very different. But if you look at the Chiefs' losses to the Packers in Green Bay, at Cincinnati, at Minnesota, those are all, and then Broncos at home, those are all losses to playoff teams. In fact, the only loss to a non-playoff team was against the Bears at home, that 18-17 game that they absolutely should have won. The offense just did nothing after Jamal Charles got hurt, although they hadn't done that much before. You can't blame the Chiefs in a lot of ways for going 11-5 and then looking at it and going, well, where were the good wins? They won 11 games. I get it. Calm down. But if you look at what happened, the split between playoff teams and non-playoff teams with their starting quarterbacks that are currently actually starting in the playoffs, that's not like it was a couple of years ago in that 9-0 run. We're going, well, they got lucky against these injured quarterbacks. Well, a lot of those guys ended up sticking around. In this case, Landry Jones doesn't count, sorry. The Chiefs have a bad record against playoff teams and a great record against teams that didn't make it. That's just what the numbers are. The Texans have a couple of quality wins. I am not hung up on that. Please don't be. Let's look at a couple of Chiefs notes that I think are interesting here before we get into, again, the nuts and bolts of the game and the predictions and all of that and every bit of information that I could get my dirty hands on. Early money in Vegas is on Houston. The Chiefs opened as 4-point favorites. It's now down to 3. I'll tell you what I think about that in a little bit. Just a little bit interesting. The Chiefs currently 3-point favorites in Vegas. On Twitter, Rich Eisen pointed out that the Chiefs are the first team to take a 10-game winning streak into the playoffs since the 2012 Broncos, who got one and done by the Ravens. Just something to keep you scared, I guess. PJ Sween on Twitter said, Coach Andy Reid said he wanted to ease Tom Bahali back in and get him used to his brace, which makes a lot of sense, but I think that gives me a little bit of pause about Justin Houston, what to expect from him this week with the Chiefs. He's back in practice, and we'll go through all the injuries in a second. But I think Reid would have loved to have gotten Houston used to his brace also, or get used back to game speed after being out for 5 straight games. To not be able to have that luxury with Justin Houston is going to be bringing him awfully cold in a game that matters more than any other game has all season. At Jason Lisk tweeted, if the Chiefs had not blown a late lead and lost in regulation to Denver at home, Kansas City would be the #1 seed in the AFC. That's how close it is. And that is infuriating. I guess I think that if the Chiefs would have won that game, they probably wouldn't have had 10 straight victories. They would have slipped up somewhere. I don't know exactly why I think that, but that would have been just a huge difference in the season. But to think that if the Chiefs hold on to that game, they just absolutely should have won. I don't know. I might have spent another week on the beach and taken a week off for this show because the Chiefs would have been on bye. We would have been sitting around going, well, I wonder who the Chiefs will play after having a full week off and home field advantage through the playoffs. Can you imagine? Can you imagine this team with home field advantage through the playoffs and having a bye to start it all off, which is what the situation the Broncos are in right now? I think I would probably call the Chiefs the actual favorite in the AFC if that was the case. If they had started 2-4. If they would have started 2-4 and beaten the Broncos. I just think that's insane. A couple of offensive stats for the Chiefs. Let's start FBG Chase. A note on Alex Smith. Chiefs running backs rank just 26th in carries, so it's not like running backs are carrying the team. I think a common misconception for an Alex Smith team. Pro Football Focus. Jeremy Maclin finished with the best hands in the league at wide receiver, just one drop from 120 targets. Jeremy Maclin worth every penny for the Kansas City Chiefs. I'll fight that one to the death. At BK Sports Talk, 2001 was Donovan McNabb's third year in Andy Reid's system. Okay? Donovan McNabb's third year in Andy Reid's system. Philly finished that season 11-5. They lost to the Rams in the NFC Championship game. Donovan McNabb in 2001 had a 58% completion percentage, over 3,200 passing yards, 25 touchdowns, 12 interceptions, just under 500 rushing yards. Alex Smith in his third year in Andy Reid's system this year, 2015, 65%, almost 4,500 passing yards, 20 touchdowns, 7 interceptions, 2 yards shy of 500 rushing yards. Very similar stat lines, though more yards, better completion percentage, fewer touchdowns, fewer interceptions, and more rushing yards for Alex Smith. I think it's very interesting to see that arc there of where Donovan McNabb was and where Alex Smith is now. McNabb was younger at the time than Smith is now. But I don't even think it's terrifying to think of the idea of Alex Smith being on the quarterback of this team. Certainly next year. He will be the quarterback of this team next year, regardless of how this season ends. Maybe even the year after that, depending on how contracts get structured, which would have been offensive to hear back in week 6. On the defensive side of the ball, Pro Football Focus tweeted that Marcus Peters was targeted 137 times during the regular season, more than any other cornerback in recorded Pro Football Focus history. I don't know how long that spans, but that's an incredible number of targets and a great stat. And Marcus Peters is probably going to be Defensive Rookie of the Year. He is a Pro Bowler. He's having a fantastic season, and he did that in the face of constant challenging. He also now owns the franchise record for passes defended in a season with 26, which is, again, fantastic. It shows it's that you can't have 26 passes defended without being thrown at a lot, but being thrown at more than any other corner in recorded history, and then also having that record is a fantastic combination. And then from Chiefs reporter during the game, Ron Parker recorded his 7th career sack, which broke the franchise all-time sacks record for a defensive back, which surprises me. Ron Parker might be one of the most under-talked about players on this Chiefs team this year, which is partially my fault, I suppose. I try to come back whenever I can. Parker really struggled a year or two ago when he had to play corner in the face of a lot of injury. But since he played as a safety after that, and playing in the slot a ton this year, he has been fantastic. When Philip Gaines got hurt, that slot cornerback spot was left wide open. Steven Nelson was not ready, the rookie. He's still not ready. Jamel Fleming got toasted, as did Marcus Cooper. I haven't heard those guys' names in weeks and weeks and weeks and weeks. It really, most of the season, I haven't heard from Jamel Fleming or Marcus Cooper. And I know everyone's hearing this going, oh, that's really nice. I haven't thought about the fact that we haven't heard from either of them in a long time. Thank Ron Parker for that. Ron Parker, the guy who was getting toasted just like Fleming and Cooper were when he was forced to play on the outside, Ron Parker is having a Pro Bowl caliber season. He's been fantastic, and he's not getting the praise that he deserves on a lot of levels. So there are just some interesting things from this Chiefs season. Maybe some of them will poke their heads through in different ways in this wild card game. But now, I'm going to thank some people, and then we're going to get to talking about what's going to happen on Saturday and why. If you're listening to the show right now, which you definitely are if you're hearing my voice, it's partially thanks to several people through Patreon.com. Patreon is a virtual tipping and rewards website where you get to support your favorite creators and whatever it is that they're creating. In this case, it's me and this podcast, Roughing the Kicker. If you go to Patreon.com/RTK, you can pledge a little bit of money and get a shout-out on the show and help support this show, keeping it free for everybody else just because you want to. And I really appreciate that for the people who do. The people who do all season, well, for a lot of the season at least, who supported the show for several weeks now. In the $20 group, Don Beal at DonBeal32, Andy Simpson, Steven Smith, and Derek Vaughn at D_Vaughn88. Those people have been pledging $20 per month, which is a huge help to me. As I always say, it brings me this beautiful sounding microphone, which is new for this year, and helps me get the show out to more people, and I really appreciate that. In the $10 group, the longest running donors, Christine Roadlander at C Roadlander and Ty Declare at Ty Declare 44. In the $5 group, Josh Beadle and Ben Rahman. Thank all of you guys so much for supporting this show through Patreon and keeping it free for everybody else just because you like the show, I guess. If you want to join that group of people, patreon.com/RTK. That's patreon.com/RTK. Or you can like the show on Facebook, facebook.com/RTK show, or follow me on Twitter, twitter.com/JB Briscoe. Now football! Saturday, 3:35 p.m. Central Time on ESPN and ABC, the Kansas City Chiefs, 11-5, will be taking on the Houston Texans, 9-7, in Houston in the wild card round of the NFL playoffs in shiny new 2016. By the way, Happy New Year, everybody! Houston, in Week 17, suffered a huge loss. They lost Pro Bowl offensive tackle Dwayne Brown. He's done for the year, for the playoffs. He's on injured reserve. Kansas City is going to be getting back Justin Houston, a healthier Tom Bahali, maybe the return of Hussein Abdullah. The injuries in this game are huge. Now, J.J. Watt just got his cast off of his broken left hand, which he had for four games, and had one sack in those four games. It came off last week, and he had three sacks, and had forced two fumbles in that game. With one fumble recovery, five solo tackles, a pass deflection, and a partridge in a pear tree. I get it. But look at what the Chiefs have done. Now, Jeremy Maclin left the game for a little bit last week and got injured, but he has returned back. He's back in practice. Justin Houston saying he's planning to return and is practicing. Halley's got a few snaps against the Raiders. As I said, Abdullah has been absent from practice for non-injury reasons. Mitch Morse and Dee Ford are the question marks. They've both had concussion symptoms. Ja Reed has returned to practice after sitting out the Raiders game. The Chiefs elevated center Daniel Muner from the practice squad to the active roster. Zach Fulton will start at center if Morse can't go. But if you look at the injury scope right now, the Texans losing Dwayne Brown is a huge loss, especially whenever that matchup is going to go from potentially Dwayne Brown versus Dee Ford to, let's see who the backup right now would be for the Texans, to Chris Clark versus Justin Houston. I'll take that matchup every single time that I can get it. And that's going to be a huge factor in this game, as are both defenses. Most of the things I just said there had to do with the offensive lines and the defenses. So in a lot of ways, I think you can argue that this game looks like a defensive stalemate. These are two very good defenses that do a lot of things very, very well. J.J. Watt had 17.5 sacks on the year. Outside linebacker for Houston, Whitney Mercilus, had 12. The Texans will bring plenty of pressure, plenty of heat against the Chiefs' offensive line that has been great but has its flaws. Vince Wilfork in the middle, and he's been a bigger name than force this year, but he's been effective. Brian Cushing is a recognizable name, but again, the biggest names to know, obviously we all know J.J. Watt, and we also all know Jadeveon Clowney, who has not been particularly impactful this season either. But you know Vince Wilfork, you know Clowney, you've heard Brian Cushing's name, but it's going to be hard to avoid J.J. Watt and Whitney Mercilus. Kadeem Carey has had a nice season. Quinton Demps is a safety for the Houston Texans, a name that isn't necessarily pleasant for Chiefs fans, but is memorable. And then Jonathan Joseph is their other top corner. I will take Jeremy Maclin against whoever he lines up against in that Houston secondary that I just gave you. You can put a safety to help. You can let Raheem Moore come over and try to help there. The safeties, Andre Hall, Raheem Moore, Eddie Pleasant, and again, Quinton Demps. I'm not concerned there. I'll take Jeremy Maclin in that lineup as much as I can get it. Plus, if you look at the rest of the Chiefs' offensive threats, the run game has been phenomenal in the absence of Jamaal Charles. And even better with Spencer Ware, who is now back and healthy, and actually outgained Charkandrick West last week, partially because the game didn't matter towards the end. But Albert Wilson, I had high expectations for Albert Wilson in the preseason, and he seemed to fall a little bit flat, maybe in the first half of the year, but he has locked down the slot receiver spot on this Chiefs team, and that's important. There has to be another option that you can trust there. I think Albert Wilson and Alex Smith have built some trust, and he is a force to be reckoned with. I don't know how they're going to cover him, and Jeremy Maclin, and I know a lot of you hate him for some reason, Travis Kelce. Those guys all have potential for big plays in very different ways. Jeremy Maclin can turn anything into a big play, but he has the stretch-the-field ability, as does Chris Conley, but Chris Conley and Alex Smith are just not on the same page yet. But Jeremy Maclin can go down the field, he can cross the field, he can take a short thing, he can take a screen and turn it into a big play. Albert Wilson can take a slant across the middle and turn it into a big play. Travis Kelce, get the ball in his hands, 8 yards downfield, he might just shed a few tacklers and take it the rest of the way. Charkandrick West and Spencer Ware. West will catch the ball out of the backfield, Ware will not, but both of them can make things happen on the ground. The Chiefs have offensive playmakers, and the Houston Texans have an offensive playmaker. And that's where I think this game actually comes down to. Nate Washington and Cecil Shorts are the sub-receivers on the Texans. We had to pay attention again with him back in week one, but keep in mind how much better Marcus Peters has gotten. That's why we had to hear those names. And also, Sean Smith was not playing against the Texans in week one. It was Philip Gaines and Jamel Fleming and Marcus Cooper. I don't even think Ron Parker had been playing the slot yet. So the matchup we were left with there was first game Marcus Peters, a lot of it at least, against fairly called superstar DeAndre Hopkins. And DeAndre Hopkins had another fantastic year, despite, I think, catching passes from five different quarterbacks, or five different quarterbacks at least threw a pass for the Texans, I think, this year. It was 16 games, 111 receptions, and over 1,500 yards for DeAndre Hopkins, with 11 touchdowns and 6 games with 100 or more receiving yards. DeAndre Hopkins is a budding superstar. This is his third season. He's only going to keep improving. This was by far his best year. Marcus Peters has been doing nothing but improving. And he's been baiting quarterbacks for almost his entire time as a Chief here, these long 16 games. Marcus Peters is going to make it look like DeAndre Hopkins has won a couple of battles that he hasn't won yet, and then try to make Brian Hoyer pay for them. And now Brian Hoyer, speaking of guys who have had their best year by far, in a lot of ways, to my definite surprise, we'll come back to Brian Hoyer. But the matchup between DeAndre Hopkins and either Sean Smith or Marcus Peters, wherever he ends up lining up, is going to define a lot of this game for the Houston Texans, because they're not going to be able to do anything else. And if they can make enough plays with DeAndre Hopkins, the Texans' defense is good enough to hold the Chiefs' offense down. But they're going to have to hold the Chiefs' offense down a little more than I would expect, and that means they're going to have to do even more on offense than they're going to be comfortable doing. Brandon Whedon, by the way, won a game with this Houston Texans team. It's not like the defense can carry this team. The defense has carried this team in a lot of ways. Both of these teams are happy to win ugly. Now, not to take a personal jab at Brian Hoyer, but he wins ugly when he's won with this team in a lot of cases, for the most part, although he has improved in big ways. In his 11 games with the Texans, he's completed over 60% of his passes, 2,600 yards, 19 touchdowns, 7 interceptions. That's a heck of a showing for a guy who couldn't stay on the field in Cleveland and could not perform in Cleveland. He had last year in Cleveland, he had 12 touchdowns and 13 interceptions. He's made grand strides with a very, very good receiver to go to. But that's all the Texans have. So all of that being said, the Chiefs are going to win this game. And here's why. When Bob Sutton and this Chiefs defense only had to focus on one part of an offense this whole season, the defense went nuts. Houston is on a 7-2 winning streak right now, okay? In the last 9 games, they've won 7 of them. In that span, the Texans racked up over 150 rushing yards as a team just 3 times. 3 of those games in that 9-game stretch, they had over 150 rushing yards as a team. They did that against these 3 defenses: the New Orleans Saints, the Indianapolis Colts, and the Jacksonville Jaguars. The Saints are 31st in rushing yards allowed in 2015. The Colts are 25th, bottom of the league. The Jaguars are 15th, right at average. The Chiefs are at 8th. The Chiefs' run offense, as I talked about a couple weeks ago, has been very, very, very good this year. A couple of cases, they got burnt. Like, I think Le'Veon Bell had the best game against the Chiefs of any opposing running back before his injury. The Chiefs don't have to give any extra focus to the Houston Texans running game. Arian Foster leaving this team with injury is probably, well, it's not probably, it's the biggest loss that they suffered. But in a lot of ways, I'd like to see what the Texans could have been with a healthy Arian Foster. Because although, if you're looking at the scope of the NFL, Alfred Blue is an okay running back. Jonathan Grimes has been okay. Chris Polk has even been okay in places. Alfred Blue is the most well-known of them. He's had the biggest games in Foster's absence. But the Chiefs, think of it this way. In a way, in a strange way that's not technically true, but I want to think about it this way here. Alfred Blue or whoever will almost be matched up in a way one-on-one with Derek Johnson. So now hear me, I'm coming right back to that, I promise. The Chiefs are going to sell out to stop Hopkins and pressure Brian Hoyer like Hoyer hasn't seen since being at the Bills, which they lost, or being at Cincy, a 10-6 Texans win, or maybe ever this year. I would argue that if Justin Houston and Tom Bahali are both playing and even kind of healthy, they will be the best pass rushers that the Houston Texans have faced this year, and the Texans are going to have to do it without their best offensive lineman, without Dwayne Brown. Brian Hoyer is going to have guys in his face all day. And if he doesn't, after what Bob Sutton did last time the Chiefs were in the playoffs, blowing that game to the Colts, Bob Sutton will have a rough time in Kansas City in the playoffs. And Bob Sutton's been great at it this year. Not only getting pressure with their pass rushers, if D Ford can go or not, you can say D Ford, Justin Houston, Tom Bahali, but with Ron Parker, with secondary stuff. With the defensive line. The defensive line has been fantastic. The Chiefs are going to pressure the hell out of Brian Hoyer, man. Brian Hoyer is going to have a rough day, or a rough time getting rid of the ball. But the Chiefs won't have to mortgage their run defense to do it. The Texans' offensive line is falling apart, the Chiefs' pass rush is getting stronger, and there's nothing to fear from Houston's ground game. So by saying lining up with Derek Johnson one-on-one, that's obviously not how run defenses work. But if you let matchups just happen naturally with a standard offense and a standard defense, I think it's fair to say that Derek Johnson and the running back are the protagonist and antagonist of those two sides of the ball. And I will take that matchup every time. I will take the standard Chiefs run defense, maybe even the slightly substandard Chiefs run defense for the sake of getting extra pressure or giving an extra body to help Marcus Peters or whoever's in the secondary trying to cover DeAndre Hopkins. I'll take that against whatever the Texans are going to do. The Texans will not... Here's what I'll say about the Chiefs defense, I guess, in this game. And this doesn't necessarily mean a win in a way, I suppose. The Texans will not run for 120 yards in this game as a team. And Brian Hoyer is going to be sacked 3 times, at least. I think the front 7 is going to explode here. And if those two things happen and DeAndre Hopkins ends up with 170 yards and a touchdown, that's fine. That's completely okay. If Tom Bahali gets a strip sack, Marcus Peters grabs a pick, and the Chiefs offense does anything, and you hold the Texans to 17 points, and DeAndre Hopkins has a nice game, awesome. Go for it. Do it. I am totally willing to accept that, and I think that's what's going to happen. And the Texans aren't going to have that luxury of focusing in on one aspect of a team to stop. Alex Smith is having a fantastic stretch. Macklin is hitting his stride in a huge way. Albert Wilson has locked down that slot receiver spot. Charkandrick West has been explosive. Spencer Ware is now healthy and running over guys again. The offensive line has not only been protecting Alex Smith a little, but has been grinding in the run game. The Chiefs offense is the far more powerful of the two offenses. Far more powerful. And if you look at how these offenses perform against top 15 defenses, this stat from P. Fuller on Twitter, when playing top 15 defenses, the Texans are 2-5, scoring 15.4 points per game. The Chiefs are 4-4, scoring 23.1 points per game. Chiefs only have 5 losses, in case you forgot. I will take the Chiefs against a good defense. I'll take the Chiefs offense against a very good defense over the Texans offense against a very good defense every single time, 100 times out of 100. Now, the place where the Texans can win this game is if it ends up looking like how the Texans beat the Cincinnati Bengals, where you look up at the end and the final score is 10-6. And in that game, T.J. Yates finished it out for the Texans, and they won the game. That's not going to happen here. T.J. Yates is on IR. And Brian Hoyer is better than T.J. Yates, and Brian Hoyer has been playing quite well. And even in that game, the Texans' leading rusher was Jonathan Grimes. It was 6 carries for 33 yards. The box score doesn't even provide a whole lot of insight here. Andy Dalton threw one interception. I don't think, let's see, A.J. Green lost one fumble. There was not any phenomenal... any phenomenal disconnect in this game. It was just two defenses just slugging each other, and the Texans ended up outscoring the Bengals because of a touchdown in the fourth quarter instead of settling for another field goal. Although a field goal would have done it too there because the Bengals only had six. If the Texans can make can keep the game under a total of 35 points, if we're talking 21-17, that's how the Texans win this game. But even then, even if you said, hey, right now, the score is 21-17, who wins it? I said, the Chiefs are going to win it. I'm not sure if I think the Texans can score 17 points against the Chiefs' defense, and I don't think the Chiefs will go without having a field goal. But overall, I don't know what I'm supposed to be ultimately concerned about here. I don't know. I want to fear this game in a big way, and I think ultimately the final score I'll give you will be closer than I'm probably making it sound right now. But I think the Chiefs win this game in basically every aspect except for J.J. Watt against Ja Reed. And Andy Reid, back in week one, this was when I was ready to believe in Andy Reid again. And after week one, I had lost some faith. I was back. I was back in the Andy Reid fan club after week one. Because what the Chiefs did to stay away from J.J. Watt, and the offense has grown up so much in those 16 weeks in between week one and this game coming up on Saturday. The Chiefs' offense has grown in so many ways. Alex Smith, the offensive line, Jeremy Maclin, Albert Wilson, the running game with Charkandrick West and Spencer Ware. If there's anyone I didn't mention, I didn't mean to leave them out. I think every single aspect of this Chiefs' offense has improved since week one. And even then, Andy Reid had a scheme to get away from J.J. Watt. All those little quick screens at J.J. Watt did plenty for the Chiefs to walk out of Houston with a victory. I think it's going to happen again. I'll say ultimately, I want to say 23-20. I want to take the points. I want to say the Chiefs keep it close because I'm afraid to say that it's a big win. But I'm gonna dial it back. I'll give the points. I say the Chiefs cover the 4-point spread or 3 points if you can get it. 23-17, I think the Chiefs win this game. Because the Chiefs don't win, I guess they have won some blowouts, I suppose. But they haven't won from wire-to-wire blowouts in quite a while. There's always a scare somewhere, either at the beginning or the end. And this is going to be very different because this is a playoff game. The dynamic is totally different than playing the Bills, than playing the Raiders, than playing the Ravens. And all of those games went very differently and had very different, quote-unquote, scares. But I think the Chiefs are going to have a tightly matched game for a while. Eventually, they'll pull ahead by a little bit. I don't think they're ever going to give it back. So the Chiefs win this game 23-17. Kansas City goes on to face either the Patriots or the Broncos next week. And they break the 22-year-long losing streak that's older than I am. I'm terrified to predict it. I really am. Winning on the road in the postseason is hard. And I feel pretty good about what the Kansas City Chiefs are going to be able to do against the Texans in this rematch. And if it comes back and bites me, fine. I'll happily sit down here, not happily, I suppose, but I'll sit down at the same microphone on Monday or Tuesday or whenever, probably Wednesday, I guess, and go, oh, I was wrong. Here's where I missed it. Or here's something that no one saw coming. Or this is the play where Marcus Peters fell down in the fourth quarter and DeAndre Hopkins ended up with an 80-yard touchdown to give the Texans the 20-17 victory. And maybe that'll happen. Judging by the Chiefs' history in every playoff game I've ever seen from the Kansas City Chiefs, I've grown to expect it, I suppose. But I'm not going to predict it here, because I think that's wrong. I think the Chiefs are a better team just about everywhere. And not that I wouldn't take... I don't know if I would take the Texans' defense over the Chiefs' defense in a vacuum. I'm not sure. Honestly. I'm really not. I'd take the Chiefs' secondary. I'd love to have J.J. Watt. But if Justin Houston and Tom Bahaly... And this is a big if. But if Justin Houston and Tom Bahaly are playing at, I don't know, 80% of their peak, I'll take that pass rush and not complain about it at all. Saying J.J. Watt and Whitney Mercilus might be the only pass rushing duo that I'm more afraid of than Tom Holly and Justin Houston. That is not a blowout at the very least. I think the Chiefs offense over the Houston offense is a domination. So we'll see, and now I'm going to surely jinx it by in this next segment telling you why I think the Chiefs have, like, actual Super Bowl potential. Boy, if I listen back to this show after the game on Saturday and the Chiefs lose, I'm going to regret it just every minute of this next segment. Have you been paying attention to what's going on in the AFC lately? If not, you can go back and listen to last week's show also, because I did a lot of this, but it's gotten even more wide open. If you look at the two teams that, you know, quote, nobody wanted to play, the Pittsburgh Steelers and the New York Jets, the Jets are gone now. I might have been as afraid of the Jets as any team in the AFC, because I think they matched up well against the Chiefs. They're not in the playoffs. The Steelers made the playoffs. They're the wild card matchup. They're going to be going to Cincinnati this weekend. They just lost D'Angelo Williams. The Jets choked away Week 17. The Denver Broncos are switching quarterbacks and offensive systems from Brock Osweiler back to Peyton Manning. The Patriots just lost to the Miami Dolphins, not in a Week 17 rest your starters game, but in a game that cost New England home field advantage. The Bengals have A.J. McCarron at quarterback and ended the year on a loss to Denver and a narrow win over Baltimore. The Texans, I'm not afraid of, as you just heard me say for 20 minutes, which will surely come back and bite me as soon as the Chiefs kick off. Why? Honestly, truly, this is an actual question. This isn't a rhetorical. Most of the questions I ask are probably sound rhetorical. I mean this question. So write your answer on facebook.com/RTK show or tweet it to me at JB Briscoe on Twitter. Please, actually, or in the comments on Arrowhead Addict. Why wouldn't the Chiefs be the favorite in the AFC? And not why isn't the national media making the Chiefs the favorite? I don't care. I do not care. I mean, I yelled about Tom Jackson saying the Chiefs have a small margin for error. They don't. They do as many things well as any team in the AFC. And I'm only talking about the AFC right now because if the Chiefs win the AFC, they don't have to face one NFC team, and we'll have 2 weeks to talk about that, and I will happily do so. I'd love to talk about the Chiefs in the Super Bowl. Don't talk about the NFC. I don't care about the NFC. I know about it. I don't need to know about it right now. Why aren't the Chiefs the best team in the AFC or the favorite in the AFC right now? Being on the road in the playoffs is huge. Saying to get all the way from a wild card spot to the Super Bowl is a huge challenge. But what team matches up really well against the Chiefs? The Patriots just fell on their face, and the Patriots are the 2 seed now. So if the Chiefs and the Steelers both win this weekend, the Chiefs would go to Denver for a rematch against Peyton Manning in Denver to go on to the AFC Championship game. If the Chiefs and the Bengals win, the Chiefs would go to New England to take on probably the most flawed Patriots team since the Tom Brady, Bill Belichick dynasty has been a thing. With enough flaws to lose to a Miami Dolphins team who's not very good. At best, Miami's an average football team. And the Steelers have a heck of a passing game, but they just lost their running back, and their defense is terrible. Like, it's bad. And I just talked about the Texans plenty. So, legitimately, why aren't the Chiefs the favorite for the AFC in your mind, or at least the second team? And if they're the second team, who do you want to give it to? If you put the Chiefs in Denver right now, instead of going to Houston, they're going to Denver, who would you take in that game? I think right now I would pick Tom Brady to do enough against the Chiefs defense, but I'm not sure in New England, but I'm not sure why. The all the things I just said about the pass rush getting to Brian Hoyer would apply just as well to Tom Brady against with a terrible offensive line in front of him. With a banged up offensive line and no run game. And no receivers. And the same happens to the Steelers. The Steelers have a great passing game, but they're not going to be able to run the ball. There's nothing to fear there. The Bengals have A.J. McCarron at quarterback. I'm not scared of their passing game. Let Marcus Peters and A.J. Green duke it out. Still have to stop the run there. Make A.J. McCarron beat you. I don't get it. I hate being this optimistic because it never works out as a Chiefs fan. I've never had my optimism rewarded here. But I'm not only am I not sure why the Chiefs aren't a favorite in the AFC, I'm not sure why they're not the favorite. And man, I wish like anything that the Chiefs had a chance to have multiple home games. To be the 1 or 2 seed. Because I think they would be. I think if you took away the aspect of them being a wild card team and the fear of them winning on the road, which hasn't been the biggest problem for the Chiefs this year. The Chiefs have been very successful on the road these last several weeks. In fact, let's take a quick look at what the Chiefs have done in this winning streak, who they've beaten on the road. They obviously ended their losing streak at Minnesota. At Denver, victory. At San Diego, blowout victory. At Oakland, two-touchdown victory. At Baltimore, 20-point victory. The rest of the games are at home in that stretch. I mean, they won in Houston, lost in Green Bay. I'm not sure I would be afraid of Green Bay that much anymore right now. Lost in Cincinnati against a different Cincinnati team. Lost in Minnesota, a playoff team. So I guess I hate to ask a question that I legitimately don't have the answer to, but I guess my answer to that is saying the Chiefs should be. If you're not considering the Chiefs as one of the actual favorites in the AFC, you try to look, and if you're a Chiefs fan, which I assume you are listening to the show, trust me, I get it. I really, really get it. I kind of hate being so optimistic about a Chiefs team that has disappointed me so many times. I kind of hate saying the Chiefs should be favored in the rest of their games, because that's never boded very well for me as a Chiefs fan. Boded well for the Chiefs. But if you zoom out, and my entire goal for this show is to be a Chiefs fan talking about the Chiefs, but to also fight to be objective where I can be. If you try to zoom out a little bit and look at all those things I just said about those other AFC teams and look at the different flaws, where do you put the Chiefs' flaws? Alex Smith is the quarterback. Well, he's been playing very, very well. The offensive line was a mess. It's been very good. The passing game, well, no, it's been fantastic. The run game, it looked really good. The defensive line, killing it. The pass rush, well, Justin Houston and Tom Pauley are back. The secondary has a couple of Pro Bowlers, plus it's John Smith and Ron Parker and Tyvon Branch and Hussein Abdullah. Well, the special teams has been great. What are the Chiefs' weaknesses? Where do the Chiefs stumble here? I think in a lot of ways, this I can relate this, I guess, to the Royals being in the World Series last year, or this year. Both. There's such an insecurity, and even the Royals just re-signing Alex Gordon. There is such an insecurity among Kansas City sports fans, a group that I am a part of. So this isn't me pointing any fingers, except for at myself also. We are a very insecure fan base, or at least we were. Maybe the Royals changed that. There are so many failures on our resumes as fans. And so many disappointments. You know, a playoff, or a division title ending in a really disgusting game against the Ravens. Going to Indianapolis and being up big at halftime. And then throwing it away in unbelievable fashion. Those are just the two that I remember most vividly because I was the oldest for those two. Or bad failures of seasons. Optimism being stepped on in the regular season or postseason. Doesn't matter. We're prepared to watch our team fail. It's just where we are. I do it all the time. That's where I constantly sit as a Chiefs fan. Is, well, what's going to cost us this time? What am I not seeing? That's how I feel about this Texans game. What am I not seeing? What am I missing that's going to cost the Chiefs this game? And the answer is, I don't know. I can't find it, and I'm trying to find it as a Chiefs fan. I want to be prepared for what's going to cost the Chiefs this game. But I don't think Brian Hoyer is picking through the secondary. even with DeAndre Hopkins. The Texans are not running the ball in this front seven. Pass rush is going to be great. The offense is going to do enough. And I only say it like that because the Texans' defense is good. If this was going up against the Steelers, I wouldn't say, the Chiefs' defense will do enough. I'd say the Chiefs' offense is going to blow up. But the Texans' strength is in their defense. So I think the offense will do enough against their best unit. I can't find it. I can't find why I shouldn't believe in this game and this Chiefs team through the playoffs. And I guess we should be happy about that. I guess we should see that as a positive thing. I guess we should try to take that optimism, but in fact, until that happens, until a victory happens, we're not going to. Now, if the Chiefs win on Saturday, I'll bring back my New Year's streamers and blow horns and everything, because we're going to be talking about the Chiefs going to New England or to Denver, and that's going to be a heck of a podcast. That's going to do it for this episode of Roughing the Kicker on Arrowhead Addict Radio. I'm Joshua Briscoe. On the outro here, I just want to say, road team Kansas City over Houston, home team Cincinnati over Pittsburgh, road team Seattle over Minnesota, and home team Washington over Green Bay for my picks for the rest of the playoffs. It doesn't really matter. It's just kind of fun. It's a playoff edition of the show, and I am so happy to be able to do that, not only because I think the Chiefs are going to win, but because I'm excited for all the playoff football. And I do think the Chiefs are going to win a playoff game. In my lifetime, with my own eyes, I might be able to see this. As always, thank you for listening to the show. If you want to get in contact with me, facebook.com/RTK show. Subscribe to the show on iTunes. Make sure you subscribe to the UF and the Kicker feed, not the Arrowhead Addict Radio one. The AA Radio has had some trouble lately. Your comments and feedback are always fun and greatly appreciated. And now it's playoff football time, and I could not be more excited. Please don't disappoint me again, Chiefs. Bye, Mom!